of Sharper Iron. This broadcast features news and ideas designed to convey a Christian worldview.
All right, my name is Jason Jans, and I'm here with my senior pastor, Les Hines. And we are here today to interview David Gibbs III, who is general counsel for the Christian Law Association and was an attorney for Bob and Mary Schindler in the recent battle for the life of Terri Schiavo. David Gibbs has recently published a book with Bethany House called Fighting for Dear Life. And so we're here to ask him questions because of his firsthand experience with the case and really because he felt the story needs to be told even on a wider level. So, Dr. Gibbs, thanks for coming with us today.
Jason, I'm honored to be with you, and I do believe the case of Terri Schiavo is one that has impacted our culture in a far broader way than many people realize. Just to bring everyone back into remembrance, Terri Schiavo was the disabled lady in Florida who needed food and water to remain alive. And her husband wanted to take away her food and water and have her life ended. And her parents, Bob and Mary Schindler, who I had the privilege of representing for the last few years of Terri's life, wanted to keep their daughter alive. Just to give an overview synopsis of the situation, Terri was a 26-year-old girl, and she was otherwise healthy. She had a temporary deprivation of blood and oxygen to her brain that would create a disability that would remain with her for the last 15 years of her life until she died at age 41. Initially, interestingly in this case, the husband was very committed, along with the parents, to keeping Terri alive. And so they made the commitment to care for Terri and to do what they could to help her. In 1993, he actually got the idea to sue doctors for malpractice. And he alleged that they didn't take good care of her, and he asked a jury for $20-plus million to care for his wife for the rest of her life. The jury didn't give him the $20 million. They gave him a couple million. But it was in 1993 where everything sort of broke down. At this point, the husband gets a new girlfriend, and that always creates a problem. You have a disabled wife, and you get a new girlfriend, and the money comes in. And he now makes the decision that he wants Terri Schiavo to no longer live and tragically takes all the money that had been allocated for her care and for her rehabilitation and uses that to fight her parents to have her life ended. In the year 2000, he got a judge to agree with him. And this judge, interestingly, never went to see Terri, never had any interaction with her, just basically said, well, you know, if this is what the husband wants. And so at this point, the family appeals it, and they lose their appeals. And I met them in 2003 when Bob and Mary Schindler came into our office and said, David, if there's anything you can do to save our daughter, we'd certainly appreciate it. And we watched some wonderful things happen. The Florida legislature and Governor Bush stepped in, and we saw the miracle of Terri's law. That was struck down a year later in 2004. And then many people will remember the flurry of appeals and activity, the United States Congress and the Supreme Court and the president and others all trying to step in and to save this young disabled lady from this death by dehydration. But then tragically, on March the 31st of 2005, Terri Schiavo stepped into eternity.
Why was this case so important to America?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons why it's important. I think people need to realize, number one, that Terri Schiavo was alive. And I find confusion to this day. This case transcended any type of local news, and then it became legal news, and it became national news. And in those last 6 months or so, it was the number one story worldwide. As everyone was trying to figure out what was the United States of America going to do with this disabled woman. You have to realize, Jason, if you think about this, in your lifetime, have you ever seen an issue where Rush Limbaugh and Jesse Jackson agreed on something?
Yeah.
And if you think about that, Pastor Hines, I've never seen that. And yet, you know, Mr. Limbaugh, a conservative commentator, Mr. Jackson, proudly calls himself a more liberal commentator. Both those men agreed that Terri Schiavo should stay alive. And I think people think from all this media coverage that somehow she was a vegetable, or somehow she was dead already, or she was on life support, or just machines were keeping her alive. And Terri Schiavo was as alive as anybody listening to this interview. I mean, her lungs worked, her heart worked, she functioned. There was nothing that was going to end her life in the reasonably near future. Second reason why it's important is we did to Terri Schiavo what our law would never allow to be done in many other circumstances. If Terri Schiavo had been a dog, the husband would go to jail for up to a year for what he did to her. If Terri Schiavo had been a convicted killer, we would have stopped it in the name of our Constitution. We prohibit cruel and unusual punishment, and Terri Schiavo would have been spared the fate that she faced under our Constitution. If she was a terrorist, it would not be allowed to be done under international law. Terri Schiavo found this tragic seam in our law. She wasn't an animal, she was a woman. She wasn't a convicted killer, she was an innocent woman. And she wasn't a terrorist or a citizen from a foreign country, she was a citizen of the United States. But we did to her what we would never allow in any of these other circumstances. And then I think we have to look at number three, life itself was on trial. When you look at the Terri Schiavo case, I firmly believe it's become the Roe versus Wade of our generation. Roe versus Wade was the abortion case in 1973 that said a life was a choice, that an unborn baby in the decision of a mother could have its life ended. And the law allowed that, and as we're well aware, 45 million children have lost their life through the process of abortion. Terri Schiavo wasn't an unborn baby. She was a 41-year-old woman. We could see her. And based on a quality of life analysis, we now allowed the choice that indeed her life could be ended. I had an attorney say something to me after the Schiavo case, and I think he said it for a degree of shock value, but I think it's important. He said, after the Terri Schiavo case, he said, we ought to rip out of the law books the American with Disabilities Act. And I said, well, what do you mean? Why would we do that? He said, well, what good is ramps to public buildings? What good is elevators? What good is equal employment or other opportunities? He said, if we're going to kill these people. And I think he made a very important point, and it was one that our founding fathers understood, that if you don't protect innocent life, you truly have no other liberty. See, our founding fathers had come from a culture that life could be somewhat arbitrarily ended. The king could say, Jason, you're my political enemy, you're a threat to me, off with your head. And you say, I didn't do anything, and it didn't matter. That's why our founding fathers, when they came over here, said, no, we will value innocent life. We will value due process of law. And that's why they said life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They understood that if you protect innocent life, all your other liberties, your speech, mm-hmm. your press, your religious liberty, everything else would emanate from that protection.
You said, I think somewhere in the book, that somebody said to you after the Schiavo case was done that I think it was like 8,000 people starve every year in the state of Florida. But you kind of kicked up dust about this, and if you just had let it alone, you wouldn't have sent the country into turmoil. Is that true that 8,000 people, elderly people starved in Florida?
Not just elderly, and that was told to me by a government official in the state of Florida. And essentially, Jason, what was said was, I don't know why, Mr. Gibbs, you and the Schindlers are making such a big deal about Terri Schiavo. Now, Terry's still alive at this point, and we're in the throes of all this. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, these 7,000 to 9,000 people a year die in the state of Florida having their food and water removed. Most of them are senior citizens. Some of them are children or middle-aged adults. And he said, you know what? The family's in favor of it. Nobody has any objection to it. It just happens. And he said, Terri Schiavo would be just another one. You wouldn't know her name. I wouldn't know her name. The country wouldn't know her name. The world wouldn't know her name if the parents would just let it go. And that always struck me that, in the opinion of a government official, there were that many people. And as I've now talked, Jason, with doctors and nurses and others, tragically, that's not just the case in Florida, but in many, many states, families, hospices, healthcare officials, rather than saying, no, our choice is to protect and to preserve life, they make the decision that, no, we'd rather let them go.
Dr. Gibbs, you had the opportunity of visiting with Terri frequently. Why don't you tell us a little bit like what she was like, and maybe we have the impression that she was on life support. Was that the case?
The only life support, Pastor, that Terri Schiavo needed was food and water. And I stress that because people go, wait a minute, I need food and water. You need food and water. Every human being needs food and water. Terri Schiavo, her lungs worked, her heart worked, her body functioned. She had no disease. She didn't have cancer, Alzheimer's, anything that was going to end her life anytime soon. And we all understand that there is a point at which you would say, well, it doesn't make sense. I mean, we're sitting here in a nice studio, and if something were to fall from the ceiling and to sever my head from my body, most people would say, not a good day for Attorney Gibbs.
Most, but an improvement.
Yeah. Most people would say, you know what? I know there are some that have tried to do it, but you cannot live with your head, your brain, 3 feet away from the rest of your body. That you have just died because your head is now detached from your body. But you could, wouldn't make any sense, Jason, but you could run out and cut her off the neck, and you could get a ventilator, you could get a heart machine, and you could keep the neck down, my corpse, functioning for quite a long time. And most people would say, well, David, why would you do that? And you're absolutely correct. It would make no sense. So keeping a dead body, keeping a corpse alive with machines doesn't make any sense. It's not a good use of resource. And if life is gone, if the head, if the body is at that point of death, it doesn't make sense just to keep the corpse functioning. Terri Schiavo is completely alive, has no disease in her body, and only needs food and water. Now, people may say, well, why didn't she feed herself? And that's a good question. She had this disability. Her arms did not work completely under her own control. So she could not, like you and I could, reach out and take a glass of water, take some food, and put it into her own mouth. Her arms worked. She could tug at a blanket. She could play with stuffed animals, but she couldn't manipulate them to feed herself. That then gave you two options. Number one, you could feed Terri, and she could swallow, and she could take in food. But it is a slow process, and the medical people don't like it because it's time-consuming. And number two, you have to be careful they don't choke or aspirate on it. You have to watch. And so what they give is a feeding tube. And people hear that, and they think, well, what is it? It's kind of like a little port in the stomach, and it sort of sits there like an IV. And then it is hooked up to a couple times a day. Terri Schiavo, for 45 minutes twice a day, would get a balanced nutrition and hydration supplement, and that would keep her healthy and alive. And then when she wasn't hooked up, it just sat there like an IV port when it was needed again. So her only life support was getting this food and water. Now, I'd heard all the media, you know, she's a vegetable, she's brain dead, and parents don't know. And so I was really somewhat pessimistic when I first went to see her, like, well, what would she be like? Will she recognize us? And as I walked into the room, Pastor, the first thing I noticed is there's no medical people. It's just like a room, like she's sitting in a Lazy Boy chair. There's no monitors. There's no beepers. She's not eating. So you walk in, and it's completely non-medical. And so then we walk up, and I'm thinking, well, she looks great. I mean, it looks like a disabled lady sitting in a Lazy Boy, big, tall, blue chair, listening to the radio. And I said, I wonder if she'll recognize any of us. And I was immediately startled again as her mother, Mary, would come to her. Terri began to squeal and to get all excited at the presence of her mom. Now, I believe there's a bond between a mom and a daughter that never goes away. And clearly, in my opinion, Terri Schiavo had a very special place for her mother. and was probably one of her sources of strength during all of these years. But Mary Schindler comes to her and says, "Honey, I brought some friends to meet you. I love you," and bends down and kisses Terry. And Terry Schiavo flips around and kisses Mary back. Now, not as good as you or I could control our mouths. She couldn't completely purse her lips. It, to me, looked like she nibbled on her, like she'd chew on her. But, I mean, responds with affection. Mary Schindler says, "I want to show Mr. Gibbs what we've been working on." Now, you have to remember, Pastor, that Mary Schindler is a stay-at-home mom. She's in her early 60s. She has no medical training, no physical therapy training. She's just doing things that she thinks helps her daughter. She says, "Terry, I want you to show Mr. Gibbs now." She says, "I want you to say, I." And Terry Schiavo, with a intensity and wanting to please her mom, looks up and with all this energy, "I," right back at her mom. And I thought, well, that's kind of impressive. And then Mary says, "Okay, now I want you to say love." And Terry would get the L's. La, real strong back at her mom. And Mary says, "Oh, honey, you're doing great. Now I want you to say you." And Terry Schiavo never got the U's. And Mary said, "Oh, honey, that's all right. Let's do it again." And I mean, I and love. I watched her do that dozens of times that day. And over the course of this, hundreds of different times. The response for her dad, completely different. Her dad had a mustache, was from Philadelphia, a little bit more of a burly personality. Sometimes he didn't have his chin completely shaven. And he'd say, "Okay, honey, now you made all over your mother, and you're all excited to see her, and I'm coming in to give you a kiss." And, I mean, Terry Schiavo would purse up her face and turn her head away and make what I call like a lemon face and giggle to avoid the kiss of her dad. Now, was Terry disabled? Absolutely. Do I hope for good health in your men's lives and in the lives of your friends and family? Absolutely. But here's a woman that's completely alive. Disabled, but alive. A couple other things struck me during that time. I talked to her, and I thought, yeah, I wonder if she's paying attention. And I did what would be rude if I did it to you. But I walked completely behind her. Remember, she's in the tall, lazy boy chair. So I'm now standing directly behind her. My head is peering out. She's basically kind of sitting under my chin. Terry Schiavo at the waist would twist and flip and move her head to where she could see me standing and talking behind her, trying to figure out what I was doing. The radio was interesting to me. She liked the radio. Classical music was what she enjoyed listening to. And in these brain-injured or locked-in states, one of the things they do know is that you take in a lot more than you're able to communicate, that it's the communication out. And clearly, classical music is a probably soothing, comforting over long time periods. Well, people would come in and change the radio, staff person or somebody just want to listen to something else. And so they change it. Terry Schiavo would fuss at the person till they would change the radio back. Also, she felt pain. And I think that's important as we think about how we let her die. Terry Schiavo, right now the weather is changing. And so as things would get colder or hotter, you'd feel the pressure in your head or sinus pain. Terry Schiavo would request Sudafed or Tylenol when people were in her room. She didn't just randomly just yell out until, but she'd wait till people were in her presence, and then she would fuss at them till they would give her pain pills to alleviate discomfort that she was having. Now, disabled, absolutely, but as alive as any person listening to my voice.
So what did Michael Schiavo, her husband, have to prove to the court in order to have her feeding tube removed?
Michael Schiavo basically had to show two things to the court. Number one, that Terry was, in the minds of the court, a vegetable that would not get better. And number two, that this is what she would want, that indeed she would want to die like this. And you have to recognize that this case really was never about what Terry would want, because she never left anything in writing. There was no document. All her wishes that she had said to her family seemed to be pro-life and orientation. And whenever you have someone who can't speak, it's all but impossible to know truly what they want. And so I really believe this case hinged on what the husband wanted. And the courts are prone to lean towards, well, here's what the family wants, and they don't want her to live.
Because it's accurate that she had no written will, just maybe a few conversations with her husband while watching some random TV shows. Is that correct?
That's correct. And remember in the opening, as I laid the overview, these conversations didn't come up for the first few years. So in the beginning, he wants to keep her alive. When he's asking for $20 million in front of the jury, he wants to keep her alive. And so in that vein, the conversation sort of showed up spuriously at the end.
So you think there was a change in his motives in what he was doing?
No question. I mean, he went from standing and saying, I'll take care of my wife for the rest of her life, to wanting her dead. Now, what his motives were, God knows. He knows. I think there's probably a combination of factors. Clearly, the money played a factor.
What money, though?
From the malpractice suit.
But the malpractice suit was already settled. So was there any future money?
Well,
or the unspent money from the malpractice?
You have to remember, he changed his mind once that money came in. I don't think Michael Schiavo ever thought it would go that long. So I think in 93, he's looking at under $2 million.
But why the decision? What was his motive in ending her life? Because he already had the money from the malpractice suit, correct?
It was designated for her care. She had to be dead for him to get the money.
So it freed up the unspent $1.2 million from the malpractice.
He's her sole heir. So anything that's left in her account goes to him. Number two, he has a new girlfriend. And that now he can get on with his life. And he's now married to that lady. Number three, he had knocked around different jobs. Bob Schindler had always been the, you know, work hard, take care of my daughter. And I think this was his chance to maybe stick it to Bob Schindler a little bit, that he was going to tell the dad what he wanted done. And so, again, God knows and Michael Schiavo knows, but I think a mix of motives. And then at the end, as things reached all this pinnacle, clearly this was his moment of fame. And he was going to not let go, even when there were offers of millions of dollars if he would walk away. This was now his moment to stand for his 15 minutes of fame.
So why did you decide to take the case after it had already been gone for so many years? I think in the book you kind of get this moving account of this late-night meeting in the boardroom there at CLA. Why did you decide to take it when even you said it appears to be a closed case?
Well, clearly, you have to look at the desperation of circumstance. I mean, here you have a mother and the father. But when you look at it from a mother's standpoint, there's no chance that they could do this. But if they could, Bob and Mary Schindler would trade places with Terry. Any parent would. I mean, if they could say, look, take my life, end my life, let my daughter live, they would do that. So you look at a mother crying in your conference room, and as an attorney, you say, well, you know, clearly one of the reasons why you went to law school was to help real people with real problems, and what could be a greater problem than the death of your innocent child?
Did you think you could save Terry Schiavo's life?
I believed that God could intervene, Pastor, and that the insanity of it, if it could get presented to the courts correctly. And I really thought, I mean, Florida outlaws euthanasia. Florida outlaws mercy killing. Florida outlaws assisted suicide. And I thought, this is just so unbelievable that it's reached this point. That with the Lord's help and with the insanity of the situation, I truly believed, as difficult as it would be, I was optimistic that her life could be spared.
Yeah, explain on the insanity part. I think you do a masterful job of explaining the irony of Terry Schiavo and John Muhammad, the D.C. sniper, regarding starvation. Expound on that.
Well, what we have is, in the Terry Schiavo case, we have a innocent woman that is being deprived by order of the government of her food and water. In the other case, we have someone that has murdered and goes on a hunger strike, and rather than say, okay, well, it's his choice, if he wants to, you know, not eat, let him, we actually moved to the point of intervening and force feeding him to make sure that he remains alive, even when he has been sentenced to die. And you look at some of these inconsistencies and you just say, and I guess the one that just always troubled me is if Michael Schiavo said, here's Terry's dog, and I really don't want to mess with this dog, and I don't want to take it down to the pound. I'm just not going to feed it. Law enforcement would come in, charge him criminally, and stop it.
My wife and I, when we were watching this case take place, the question that kept coming to our mind was, why didn't Michael just walk away from the situation and give Terry back to her parents for them to care for her?
Pastor, that's the question that haunts this case. I realize many of your listeners to this interview may be more pro-life in orientation. But whether you are in favor of keeping Terry Schiavo alive or whether you feel sorry for the husband, regardless of your viewpoint, that really is the haunting question of the case. When you have a girl who is being cared for and willing to be cared for by her parents, why do we have to insist on her death? And in that vein, that was the question that really the international media keyed into as well. They couldn't figure out the United States of America, the lone superpower. I mean, here this disabled woman and the president tried to stop it. Why did we have to insist on her death? And some of the comments were sort of interesting. The Australia Today show, is the Terry Schiavo case the abandonment of what your founding fathers stood for? When they said life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, has America now divorced itself from its founders? The German media, the Nazis that you came and stopped, how is this any different? Many countries asking, are you in Afghanistan or Iraq standing for democracy and freedom? How is Terry Schiavo being treated in light of these ideals that you're trying to teach to the rest of the world?
So why did Judge Greer, who seemed to be the key judge in the whole case, seem so against allowing medical experts to diagnose Terry? He declared her as unconscious, unaware, and without cognition, and he never even saw her. Why the bias? It seemed biased to me.
He had made his decision. You have to realize a couple things about Judge Greer. Number one, he's a probate judge. Now, I don't say that with any disparagement, but that's not someone that does many trials. A probate judge basically deals with dead people's stuff. That's his job. Okay, somebody's died, you know, the house, the wills, the bank accounts, and what do we need to do? And lawyers walk in, and it's a very paper-oriented practice. Okay, show me the list of stuff. What's the will say? Has it been dispersed correctly? And the attorneys kind of spoon-feed it to the probate judge. So they aren't doing the sophisticated trials or the more savvy work. So this case landed in front of someone that's candidly not very experienced in dealing with debated or contested issues. The law did allow for him to make this decision that he could, with the husband who was the guardian, he could say, if this is what the husband wants and if this is what I believe the law allows, I can do this.
Now, was that only because of the prior law that came into effect that made a feeding tube, I forget the words, but life-sustaining?
Yes. You don't have to be kept on life support. And historically, food and water was never considered life support. If Terry Schiavo was in some other state, she'd still be alive today, just to give people an understanding that, you know, things that look kind of boring in your probate code as they deal with laws or different things in your legislature can have tremendous real-world impact. The Florida legislature changed it to include food and water as life support. And so as you look at this, you're looking at the removal of life support being food and water. And if you were to, for example, take a baby and you were to say, well, you know what, this baby can't really function, doesn't have any quality of life, we're just going to take away the food and water and let it die. Well, under these type of thinking, that would be okay. Well, you're just removing the life support, what's keeping that child alive. That's why I believe that Terry's case is so important, is that it has set us on a slippery slope in this country where we are literally going to be deciding whether life will indeed be intrinsically valued as a gift from God, or whether the, what I call the evolutionary mindset, you know, we all came out of space dust, it was a big accident, and boom, here we are, and survival of the fittest, strong survive, weak get thrown away. If that mindset dominates our culture, I could just throw out one little scary hypothetical. Social Security's broke, and we have no way to solve it, the situation with our federal government, and people are living too long. You don't have any quality of life after 75 anyway. So unless you're independently wealthy at 75, we will just basically start instituting end-of-life procedures. Have a nice little meal, get together with your family, do the right thing, and have your life ended. And that, while it sounds kind of spooky or almost like out of a novel, is a lot of what's being debated in these issues, where people want the right to self-determine. But in this, it's not just their determination, it's the determination of the government in terms of weighing in as to what life should be protected and what life should be ended.
I closed the first part of the interview regarding the case, and then we'll kind of get into the issues. But when this went to the House of Representatives, Representative Trent Franks from Arizona said this, and you quoted in the book, "If we as a nation subject Terry to death while her brother, her mother, and father are forced to watch, we will scar our souls. And we will be allowing those judges who have lost their way to drag us all one more ominous step into a darkness where the light of human compassion has gone out and predatory survival of the fittest prevails over humanity." Are we there at survival of the fittest?
Well, truly, I believe we have moved in that direction, because we are at the point where, as a nation, we don't see value in less than perfect people. We're right now in the disposable generation. I mean, you got a cell phone and it's a little out of date, you just throw it away. Computers, replace it, get new, bigger, better. And we are living in a culture right now that really values health, values attractiveness, values money. And if you can't provide that, there are many people that say you have no intrinsic worth. That's where the Christian viewpoint is so different. We believe that every life has a distinct value given to it, especially by God.
Well, that concludes the first part of our interview regarding the case of Terry Schiavo. And we'll carry a second interview regarding the issues that are going on.
Sharper Iron is a blog and forum whose mission is to edify Christian brothers and sisters by providing a place to publish and discuss news and ideas from a Christian, biblical, and fundamentalist worldview.